This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Just before the break, we were speaking with a state lawmaker from Monroe County who wants Governor Whitmer to consider modifying the stay-at-home order and allow some businesses to get back to work, provided they can be safe. University of Michigan history professor and physician Dr. Howard Markell joins us now for some perspective on how the decisions affecting an entire state or country get made in epidemic conditions. Howard, welcome back to Stateside.
Great to be here, April. Hope everyone's well.
When you hear people talking about lifting the stay-at-home order, where does your mind go?
Well, it brings me to a state of panic and worry because we're not there yet. You know, these stay-at-home orders are, you know, temporary band-aids that prevent the virus from circulating widely. We have not yet hit our peak, let alone the low points where we can safely do that without incurring still another peak and more cases and more deaths. So my advice, my medical advice, is to stay the course as long as we can.
Given how physically mobile our society is, what are the concerns about lifting restrictions for some, but not for all, when a communicable lethal illness is in play?
Well, it's hard to know what some means, you know, and the reality is that the more it's opened up, the more the people are moving about, the more risk there is of spreading this respiratory virus, which is very deadly for many of our citizens in the state and beyond. So we're just not there yet. I mean, we're still getting more cases with the measures. So you can imagine how the curve would change, the epidemic curve would change if we relax them. And it's easy to understand that people are getting restless. This is not the easiest thing we've endured in our lives, but it would be far worse if many more people got sick and died.
The drumbeat of voices increasingly among some elected leaders to clear the way for some businesses to resume their operations is growing. Is there a point at which you can't keep people home anymore?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is one of the age-old tugs of war in a pandemic is how long to maintain a quarantine. And the two ends of that rope tend to be the economic or business interests and the other side are the public health interests. As a physician, I always value life over money. It's just the way I was trained, and it's at the core of my beliefs. So my prediction is that we can weather these economic storms. But then again, critics might say you're not an economist. Mm-hmm. But there are points where, and this has happened, you know, during 1918, the influenza epidemic, for example, there were some cities that said, hey, we've had enough. We just can't tolerate this. Open the schools up, open the businesses up, and so on. But what happened epidemiologically in 1918, and this is what is of great interest now, is that when those breaks were pulled off too early, another peak happened, and sometimes it was even worse with more cases and more deaths than the first one. So we're really not there yet. We're not out of the woods yet. So any call for a relaxation of these very onerous rules, admittedly so, it's just too early. It's like a patient who's in bed and had a major operation and wants to go out and play a football game. You know, doctors say, hey, wait a minute, you're not there yet. And that's what I think our public health experts are saying to our communities at large. We're still pretty sick, and we got to take care of this before we can open things up.
Well, there are clearly some circles in which people feel like they'd rather take their chances with the physical threat than with the economic fallout. And because of that, we have seen some threats made against scientists and medical professionals who say stay at home and the elected officials who believe them and take that advice. You've been keeping an eye on this. What have you found?
I have. I've received a few of those types of emails myself, but there has been a large undercurrent on the internet and in social media taking various scientists to task, many of them who I know and I've worked with them, who are really above board, above politics, and really good scientists. I don't always agree with some of them, but I know that their motives are good and they do the best they can with the information they have. You know, we're really blessed in this country to have so many wonderful experts like Tony Fauci and the CDC Epidemiology Corps and in the state of Michigan as well, people who work day and night for very low pay, by the way, and not a great deal of reward, but still work as patriots and public servants to deny the science, to deny facts, is akin to what we've seen over the last several years with climate change and many other scientific issues. Not everybody is entitled to their own facts when the science is quite clear. And I think we are best advised in this circumstance to listen to those infectious disease experts who do this for a living and really do know what they're talking about. And, you know, they're not infallible. They will make mistakes. But that's our best bet in getting through this storm.
Do you worry about how these few actors who hold those views and feel strongly enough to make threats influence the mainstream debate?
Yes, yes, because, you know, they also write their congressmen or email their congressmen and their leaders, and they also can't. There are some, state authorities and federal authorities who are elected who believe the same things that their constituents are saying. They are using false information or using old information in a sophisticated way, but not in a scientific way to deny what we are doing in terms of flattening the curve or even the threat of COVID. But, you know, the notion of, like, we'd rather take our own chances is not exactly civic-minded, because these epidemics, particularly COVID-19, is a socially mediated disease. And the more that we interact with one another and breathe on each other and cough and sneeze on each other, the more it will spread. But the reality, the big difference between now and, say, 1918, is that there are so many people who are alive today who would never be alive back then because they have heart conditions or lung conditions or cancer or what have you. And those people are very vulnerable to COVID-19, and we all know and love people with those conditions. So I think the better part of valor is to stay the course.
You know, about a month ago, Howard, I asked you if you felt a lot of anxiety about the new coronavirus, and at that time you said without hesitation, no. I just wanted to check in on whether you still feel that way.
Personal anxiety? Well, I got to tell you, I went to the grocery store the other day, and I was wearing a face mask, and it was kind of crowded, and I was amazed at my own response. I moved very quickly and wanted to get out of there as soon as I could. And everyone felt the same way. There was this invisible foe potentially in the grocery store. We were all afraid that we might contract it. But generally, no, I'm blessed with a wonderful job at the University of Michigan, and I have lots of work to do, and I'm able to work in my home. I have a roof over my head and food in the refrigerator. So I feel anxious when I go out in public, and I've been trying to restrict that as much as possible, and I would recommend others do the same.
Howard Markel, physician and history professor at the University of Michigan. Howard, nice talking to you. Take care.
Always a pleasure. Stay well.